Hi, welcome everyone to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. My name is Irvin Nugent, and today, as always, I am welcomed by my friend, my co-host, and my collaborator, Bridget Tyre. Bridget, how are you doing today?
I am doing fabulous, Irvin. It is wonderful to be with you today. And we were chatting right before we hit the record button that we are both grateful to be out of the month of January as we record this. It's, I don't know, is it February 2nd, 3rd, whatever it is?
It's the 3rd. Yeah, I amen to that.
Yes.
Bye-bye, January.
Good riddance. And to start off this new month, we have a great topic on tap. And tell them about it, Irvin.
Yeah, today's topic is all about curiosity and it being a key to successful leadership. And, you know, where the idea for this episode came was a Harvard Business Review article, which included some research on a survey of hundreds of leaders asking, you know, hey, as we go into the crystal ball, what are some things that leaders need to make it in the future? One of the interesting things that came to the top or near the top was curiosity, which I thought, I'm curious about that. It's not exactly something I think I was expecting, but makes a lot of sense because, you know, we know that there's a lot of research there and it says, you know, curiosity is better for decision making and you get more creative solutions and greater collaborations and people have higher energy the more creative they are and it motivates, engages the workplace. So I suppose it makes sense. And even from, you know, an evolution point of view, it makes sense as well, because curiosity was vital for our survival. Things, you know, where is the next meal coming from? Where can we go to keep ourselves safe? All of these, you know, curiosity creates wonder. It helps us explore. I'm sure those of us who were more curious both survived and we found new ways to thrive. And Bridget, I know you are delighting in with your grandchild, et cetera, and children have a lot of natural curiosity. And yet it's funny. The older we get, it seems the less we have. And, you know, I was thinking about that when it comes to leadership. You know, what is it about leaders and curiosity? And I suppose, who is it we promote? I think we tend to promote fixers. Yeah. We tend to promote people that find solutions to problems. And we tend not to promote, I suppose, people who ask too many questions. It's like, don't ask a question, bring me a solution, which I suppose in one sense is true. But when you think about it, there's a message, a subtle message going on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, once we've attained kind of a position in leadership, we want to be promoted. I kind of think we have to be the fixer. And I'm wondering, does that really impact some deeper, you know, the ability to ask deeper questions? And could that be perceived as, you know, well, they don't have knowledge. Why are they asking all these questions?
Yeah.
So I think that's where it comes from today. So Bridget, I think before we kind of look at maybe how curiosity might show up in some leaders, maybe you should ask the question, you know, how can leaders be more curious? How can we create in the workplace a culture of curiosity?
Yeah, it's the exact right question because, as you said, when we get older, I think we lose naturally some of our curiosity from childhood. But also, as leaders, we get promoted for having answers and fixing problems. So I think without being intentional about this, it's easy for leaders to fall into a position where curiosity takes a backseat. So there's a couple of things that come to mind that I think are essential. And one is that I think we have to give explicit permission for people to be curious. It's like we have to authorize curiosity.
Yeah.
And, you know, got to make it psychologically safe for people to ask questions. We need to be okay with not having all the answers ourselves. And we need to really slow down enough to be curious. I mean, think about that. In the pace that we have in the modern workplace, there's no time for curiosity. There's no time for questions.
Yeah.
We just have to do.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first step is to say, I need to give myself permission as a leader to be curious and not have all the answers. And I need to explicitly grant that permission to my employees and reward them. For that. I think the other thing is this notion of sort of role modeling always on learning, meaning it's not like, okay, I'm in a training class, so now I'll get curious. Or, you know, I'm going to go to this conference once a year. I'll be curious there. But it's rather a mindset that we're bringing all the time and that we're modeling. And I think that's really important because you talked about how do we create a culture of curiosity. It's not by having an offsite once a year where we talk about curiosity.
Yeah.
Right. And we have to be willing not just to be consumers of information, which we're good at. We're always, always wading in endless amounts of information and data, but rather that we are really seeking new insights.
Yep.
And that's a different thing. That takes curiosity. And I guess the last thing I would say, Irvin, to your question is self-awareness is really important with this. That, you know, are we willing to step back and be good observers of ourselves and our teams from a place of curiosity and not judgment?
Yeah.
It's so easy to be judgmental about what we observe. And, you know, like an example, and we talked about this in one of our recent episodes on taming triggers. Like, you know, if you want to tame your triggers, you have to become more self-aware of what triggers you and how you react.
Yeah.
And if you try to observe that from a judgmental point of view about yourself rather than curiosity, you won't get very far.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Those were top of mind things that came to me. What would you add?
Yeah, I love those. I think the only one we've kind of mentioned it, but I just explicitly add it, is how hungry are you to ask questions and to listen? You know, I think there is a bias towards solutions and fixing.
Yeah.
And so often we have to do that. But can we have, say, a mindset that's able to question and maybe sometimes just disable, like, you know, our own opinion? Very often we feel, you know, we've got the solution. And yet, can we sit perhaps and ask some questions which go a little deeper, maybe cause a little discomfort, challenging questions, you know, about the quality of the decision? We can have a quick decision. And I think we've talked before, you know, about sometimes anxiety drives quick decision making.
Yeah.
And maybe this is the wrong decision. Maybe there's a better decision. And do we have the patience and the questions to really challenge that and really see things from a fresh perspective? I think we've talked before. One of the things I always love is can we have a beginner's mindset? And, you know, one of the things about beginners is that we almost give ourselves permission to try again, to fail, to think of new ways. We almost absolve ourselves from needing to have the perfect answer.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good one. So, you know, asking some of the more penetrating questions. What if? How? Why? And I think, you know, curious leaders urge organizations to question everything, and people can model their behaviors on that. So I think that's really, you know, funny. I think that's really important that we're able to kind of have that questioning and that curious. And of course, the questioning is not a rough questioning or one that puts people on defensive, but rather it's something that really opens and like, oh, I didn't think about that. Let me think about that. So it's, you know, questions can put us on the defensive, but I think what we're talking about is this is not on the defensive. This is really challenging us to kind of really push and maybe widen the lens and really think a little deeper and wider.
You know, I think that's such an important thing to say, that asking questions from a curious place is not like an interrogation.
Yes. Yes.
You know, people feel like you're interrogating them. That's not what we're talking about, you know? So, being deeply curious. And we have an advantage. It's one of the perks of our profession as coaches, that when we first get training, we are deeply ingrained with this, like, ask questions. Don't tell people what to do. Don't give them advice. Don't say anything. Just ask a question. And do you remember how hard that was at first?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because we're just not, as human beings, that's just not our nature. Yeah.
Yeah.
So who do you think, as a leader, really embodied this trait?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I want to give up one example. And I think what I love about this example, it's an example of something when there's a dead end, and do you leave it or do you have the curiosity to break through the dead end. And the person I'm thinking of here is Jack Dorsey. Actually, the example comes from a great book, actually, if people, if you're interested in exploring kind of questions, it's Warren Berger is the author, and it's called A More Beautiful Question. I love that. Ooh. I love that title. And the subtitle is The Power of Inquiry to Spark Breakthrough Ideas. And so here's the example. Jack Dorsey, there was two events that happened to him that were dead end situations. One was he had a friend who was an artist. This friend of his had this potential to sell one of his pieces of art. And the deal fell through. The friend told him, you know, the deal fell through. He said, well, why did the deal fell through? He said, because I just didn't have a way to accept credit cards. This person was only willing to pay through credit card. And so that was interesting. And then he had another friend who I think was just a little bit after that. This person was called Jack McClevy, a friend of his, who was unable to complete a $2,000 sale of his glass faucets and fittings because he couldn't accept credit cards. Huh. So the same issue. And so you think about it, it's like, well, okay. I mean, the thinking is we just can't do that, you know, credit cards, you know, et cetera, dead end. But then what Dorsey, you know, he really thought it just grabbed him and he'd been curious about this problem. And why is it that only established businesses, why is it that artists or entrepreneurs or people who are starting up are not able to create credit card transactions? Because at that time, you had to have established business, you had to go through the bank, et cetera. And the curiosity created Square. And Square is, you know, it's when you go now to, actually, I got my hair cut this weekend. And when I went to pay for it, I got a credit card. And here's a little entrepreneur, two barbers, and they have Square. And so they were able to take my credit card. And it's this highly accessible credit card reader, which literally opened the door to entrepreneurs, to small businesses that enable them to accept credit cards. And so what I love about that, it's this, in the face of a dead end, this curiosity to explore new paths. What are we not looking at? What is possible? Yeah. And of course, it created this amazing breakthrough that has permeated the whole marketplace.
That is a very interesting example. And I did not know what was behind, you know, Square as an so cool. In that example, those kinds of dead ends, I could easily just see myself saying, well, that's it. I mean, can't do that. And what a nice reminder to me and all of us, like, hey, that's a place for curiosity.
It is. Cool. Yeah, and I think a great example for any leader, I mean, how many times have we said, no, we can't do that, or that's a dead end. And just, and like, not that we're saying, you know, spend an inordinate amount of time, but just really think about it. Is this true? Like, is there any curiosity? Is there another way of doing this? So yeah, I think that's a great example. Bridget, I'm curious, anyone come to mind for you when you think about a leader who embodies curiosity?
Well, there are so many that I've been inspired by, but I'm going to pick this one. The truth of the matter is that, you know, great lasting companies don't become great or don't last by accident. They're led by, you know, really inspiring leaders and teams. Mm-hmm. And that was the case for Ford Motor Company when Alan Mulally took over as CEO at a time when that company was really struggling. And he is the one who is credited with turning it around. When he joined Ford in 2006, the company was deteriorating and losing money rapidly. I think the forecast that year was that they would lose $17 billion. That's a chunk of change.
Yeah, chunk of change there.
So here he is taking over one of the largest corporate transformations in history. And how did he begin? One might think, well, I bet he looked for ways to cut costs and cut people, but that was not how he started. You know how he started? He started by asking his team why people weren't buying Fords anymore. He got really curious. He wanted to better understand before he took action the root cause of this problem and not, you know, focus immediately on sort of temporary solutions.
Yeah.
And he interviewed dozens of people, you know, Ford insiders. He interviewed the board. In addition, he went outside and he interviewed professionals from the automobile industry and finance and business and consulting. And you can just see, you know, he's interviewing people. He's gathering information. He's just really, he's not interrogating people. He's inquiring into, and then he created summaries of all these interviews, which I find very interesting, and put it in a binder in his office, you know?
Interesting. Yeah.
So I think a lot of people were initially confused by his calm curiosity. They're probably thinking, get with it here, man. We're losing $17 billion. Quit asking questions. But he is actually famous for three particular questions he asked that were at the center of his strategy. And to our listeners, I just want to say, I bet you're going to be surprised by these three questions, because I know I was. The first one was, who are you really? And I love this question so much because, in fact, in my book that I wrote with Heather Jukes, The Missing Conversations of Leaders, the first one was the identity conversation. And the question is, who am I as a leader? And so here he was asking people, who are you really? Because I guess he really understood that this is where leadership starts. If you don't know who you are and you aren't grounded and clear in your values and your beliefs and what you stand for, then, you know, you're hard to follow.
Yep.
So that was the first question. Who are you really? Second one, where are we going? So, you know, leaders may feel like they have a vision, and I bet he did have some kind of an emerging vision. But, you know, to him, a more powerful and engaging option is to make it a shared vision, a collective endeavor, rather than going solo. We ask people, where are we going? And then third, this is interesting. Do you feel seen? Do your employees feel seen and heard by you? As a leader, are you concerned about what is important to them? Are you connected to what people care about? Those three questions blew me away, that as somebody coming in to turn around a failing large business, that he chose to start with those first three questions. And it worked because he, as I said, was credited with turning around Ford at a time when it was failing. What a great example, right? I just was very inspired.
I love that because, yeah, it is. Instinctually, you think, well, we're losing money, cut. And you've and I'm sure they made cuts. I'm positive they did that. But it's that that's not the solution. The solution here is not cutting. The solution is, why are people not buying Fords? And getting back to those amazing centering questions. Yeah.
Yeah. And being curious about, well, why did people stop buying these cars? Because they bought them before, you know?
Yeah.
It's really cool. All right. So let's share one more example. So bring it home for us and give us.
Yeah, I think it's a great example. I had a client who I call Jill. Jill had gone through a 360 and it had some feedback. And one of the feedbacks was that, or the feedback was that Jill moved too quickly and was hastily making decisions. And I think in her defense, she would say, well, you know, there's so much to do here. Things are changing. I have to, et cetera. And just the way she described it, you could sense that really stung. There was something about that that just stung. And so, you know, in the midst of that, when you get feedback, we talked about this a few weeks ago, what do you do? And it was interesting because at that time, she just had started a book, which many I'm sure have called, you know, have read, which is Carl Dweck. And it's all about this comparison of having a fixed and a growth mindset. And so we kind of jumped off from there. And she said, you know, I think I have a fixed mindset. I think that I'm really operating out of fear and I'm making these decisions out of fear. And I would love to explore in coaching, what would it look like for me to be more growth, to be optimistic, et cetera. And what really came from that was an exploration of questions. She said, And it was almost, you just innately said, I don't think, well, we talked about what would slow you down. And so she said, I think I need to ask more questions.
Wow.
And so this way of asking more questions came for her as a methodology for kind of slowing down and not making too many quick fixes. But it really opened as well her curiosity about, you know, I'm just not curious enough. So instead of things like when something went wrong, she said, you know, one of my popular questions is who's to blame for this? How can I be in control of a situation? It was like, you know, well, what am I responsible for? You know, what are my choices here? And so, you know, some of the questions then that came up was like a why question. You know, why is this important? You know, so instead of having to make the decision now, why is this important? Do we? How might we approach this differently as an ability to generate some new ideas? And what if questions? So like, what if this went wrong? What if we lost the supplier? What if things didn't work out? And how can questions, how can we be more effective? And so I just love this because I really felt she really dived into the ability of curiosity. And I think, you know, sometimes they'll say, well, if you ain't got it, you know, it's just not going to come. And I think she was an example of someone who really changed her way of thinking and really moved into a more curiosity. And what was funny, she said, you know, I suppose the greatest compliment I said is not from work. Said, I have made changes in work. People have noticed it, but it's my husband because he said to me the other night, who are you? He said, I feel like I'm married now to the version 2.0 of someone that I had married before. So it really permeated her whole life. And I suppose, you know, if you're listening to this thinking, you know, well, how do you develop curiosity? I think there it is. It is by, I think a nice way is really paying attention to the questions you answer, because then curiosity begins with great, juicy, wonderful questions that open up and provide wonder and provide a different way of thinking.
And, you know, it'd be interesting to discover whether making this change led to her enjoying her work more.
Great point. Yeah.
I just have a suspicion that maybe she got an uptick in fulfillment, you know, because that reminds me of the neuroscience behind curiosity, which is that when you are deeply curious, you get a hit of dopamine.
Yeah.
I mean, bottom line is it's obviously around because it helped us as a species to survive.
Yeah.
But obviously far more than that, it's so vital to our spirits and to our ability to lead people well and to innovate and to create and to transform ourselves, our teams, you know, our companies. It really is a superpower in that regard. This was a fun conversation, and I feel reinvigorated by the examples that we shared, and particularly by your client. That's really, really impressive. So, and thank you to our listeners for joining us. As always, we hope you were inspired and got a little nugget out of today's conversation. We look forward to our next topic. But Irvin, we may not have identified that next topic, have we?
We have. In fact, our next topic is going to be all about reframing. I love it because I think it's a follow-up from this about curiosity opens new possibilities. And so our next topic is going to be about how reframing can be used to open up new possibilities.
Perfect. We look forward to seeing you then.
Bye, everyone.